Ramble.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Did you talk about Miles' wedding?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Baby. Yeah.
Did you talk about how awesome Miles' parents are?
No,
we didn't.
I spoke to each of them for at least 45 minutes.
I saw, yeah,
we got into very intense conversations about life and education. And
yeah, they're teachers. Oh, they used to be. They retired.
They were cool. I was like, wow, these are some cool-ass white parents.
While Keith and I were ruining Miles' wedding, he was just charming the pants off his parents.
After that, I was charming lots of individuals.
You also spent some time with my parents, though.
I did.
Well, I think we ruined it because we were so charming.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Miles, your father has a ponytail.
Oh, he's a ponytail, and yeah.
He's so tall.
Pony.
That's well, we used cool to have a pony, but it got struck by lightning.
What?
Yeah.
Did it survive?
It did not survive.
Did it become a magical pony?
It did not make
it. That was traumatic.
That was the cartoon.
Why would you tell us that
was
story?
Secretly
do you know
a unicorn?
How much I like ponies?
I feel like I've told the story before. It got struck by lightning. There was a storm. Lightning struck the tree, went down the tree and up the root. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're joined by Eugene Lee Yang.
Wait, no. Come back. Bring it back.
It went
to that,
up the root
to the pony.
It went down the tree, up the root, and then caught the pony by the hoof.
Yeah,
the pony was standing on the
root. Did he have horseshoes?
Yeah, I don't know. I think so. Yeah,
well, it's the worst place to stand is near any sort of tree.
Under a tree.
That's so crazy because normally lightning's just trying to get to the ground.
Yeah,
it's not trying to come back up on top. It just wants to go back to the earth for some reason.
We got the entirety of the tree.
What was the pony's name?
Well, we had a horse and a pony, Chance and Flowers.
Flowers died?
It was Flowers, not Chance.
No.
Chance was also alive.
He risked it. Get struck by lightning.
You gotta risk it to get the sea biscuit.
When lightning hits the ground, does it keep going? Because where's it go?
I imagine the charge diffuses out throughout the ground.
Does it hurt the surrounding
dirt?
Probably a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you're standing
on the dirt.
Yeah.
But I don't know if dirt can get hurt by negative or positive charges as much as people that have water in their bodies
can. What about all the snails in the ground and the worms? Oh,
they definitely
you
got.
Think they get
yeah,
fried.
They probably get fried. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They probably get like fucked.
Well, RIP Flowers. I would have told you that that's how unicorns are made and that he's flying in the sky now.
That is a good story.
I mean, if it were a metal pole on his nose, that would have really been dangerous. As
if
a unicorn,
he had a unicorn horn?
If he had a metal pole for
or
a unicorn horn.
Or just a metal pole in his nose.
Yeah.
Unicorns are basically lightning rods.
They basically are. Like, yeah. I know they're made out of horn, but probably some of them have like metallic traces.
Oh, there's definitely magic metal.
They're made out of magic.
Made out of magic.
Magic is
very conductive.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. You ever seen a magic wand? Sparks are always flying.
They used to think electricity was magic.
They did.
It kind of is.
I kind of still think that sometimes.
It is. Yes.
Batteries? What the fuck's up with that?
Right? I do think about that all the time. Yeah. I'm like, what do you mean it's running out of energy? Where's it going? Nothing's coming out of that thing.
Stored
it's
chemical
not like it's
energy.
Full of juice? What kind of juice is
it? Where's it go?
Anyway, your parents are cool, Miles.
Yeah, they're nice.
Yeah.
I like them. They're good people.
No, I'm calling them cool.
They're cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad is cool, dad.
Ever been to a dinosaur museum?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
They feel magical.
Yeah.
It's like, dinosaurs? Am I at a set of Lord of the Rings? No. This is real life.
I mean, no wonder they thought dragons were real.
Yeah.
They would just find big ass skulls and be like, well, this is scary. They must still be here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of times they used to think, because I randomly do research on mythical beasts.
Of course.
They would assume a beast like biblical ones, like Behemoth or something.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually just like a hippo. But they would blow it out of proportion and say this gargantuan creature.
Yeah.
But it was just like, I don't know, Miles's pony.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Miles's electrified pony.
If you
pony.
Assemble a horse set of skeleton bones wrong, you can make a freaky looking monster.
Or even if you see
you can make a freak.
You see a hippo in the wild, it's a little dark. There's a little misty haze. You just Or you get what's scared. That? How are you going to tell that
story? Well, there's
story
the huge movement.
If you don't know the word hippo,
looks like a,
you're going to say it's a giant beast that was a water beast.
In the water,
But if you think about it, there's a huge movement in paleontology where if you look at the skeleton of a hippo and then you look at an actual hippo, he has so much chonk and floof around it like owls that why would a T-Rex, for instance, actually look so close to its skeleton? What if they were adorable chonks?
What if they had badonkadonks?
Yeah.
T-Rex.
They could have just been rolling around.
They're just covered in like 3 feet of fat in every direction.
Yeah. I love that.
Just chubby little dinosaurs running around.
Wow.
Yeah.
Then they would have to eat even more.
Mm-hmm.
There used to be giant bears. They were like two or three times the size.
That's horrifying.
So I assume those were also the bears are like floofy, fat, cuddly.
Yeah.
So he must have been floofy, fat, cuddly, scary.
Have you seen those videos in Russia where they just are like, silly bear, and the bear's just partying with him?
Yeah. I don't know what Russia's doing to their bears.
Those Russian bears.
Did I tell you guys I made the mistake of telling my three-year-old that the dinosaurs died from a comet?
Did he get upset?
And, like, once I was in, I had to really explain the whole thing of like, yeah, like, there was ash that blocked out the sun and then it killed all the plants and then they had nothing to eat. And he was like, oh, yeah. And then he was telling other people like, yeah, well, see what happened was there was a big comet and then the dinosaurs didn't have anything to eat and they all died. And I don't know if I felt proud, but so, I did feel accurate.
He's got some cocktail party conversation.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys, yeah, the dinosaurs died, right?
About the dinosaurs.
Yeah, anyway,
I appreciate the education. Yeah. I usually think that starts hitting around second or third grade when you're that one kid in the class who says, actually, Santa can't fit down chimneys. Mm-hmm. What about the houses without chimneys?
Mm-hmm. Well, he slides in them.
Yeah.
He goes through the
like a rat.
Hot water heater. Comes out the shower head.
I think it'd be funny if I still believed in Santa.
Me too.
Nah, there's a cutoff age for that for sure.
You think it gets sad?
I think it gets really sad.
Yeah. Our Christmas movies always end with like Santa being real and like two of the parents being like, oh, fuck. Like, I really would love to see just a sequel to a Christmas movie so we can deal with the reality. Oh.
Fuck,
it just
turns into a beautiful mind where they're like,
now what else is real? What else is real? Everything I know is a lie. Their marriage is like over. They're like, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah, you should start the movie at the end of children's Christmas movies with making like an adult thriller.
They're just falling apart.
That's so funny.
If Santa's real.
Well, if you're listening in for the first time in a long time, then nothing's changed. But Eugene, you're back in the stew, and we haven't even mentioned it yet.
Woo!
Surprise, bitches.
Eugene's back, baby.
Oh, we got biscuits.
We got biscuits.
Well, we have biscuit, and I'm eating the whole
one biscuit.
Mm-hmm. I kept drinking it by chunks to let other people have some biscuit, but nobody did, so I just finished the biscuit. But Eugene is here.
Yeah. What's up, Eugene?
What is not up?
How's the last couple months been since we caught up with you? I feel like I'm on a daytime talk show and Carrie Underwood is here and I'm like, it's our new segment, Catching Up with Carrie.
Why am I Carrie Underwood?
I just feel like she's like stock, you know, daytime talk show.
Gotcha.
Also, I saw a segment one time that was literally called Catching Up with Carrie and it was Carrie Underwood. And I was like, is this what celebrities just do? They go on talk shows and just talk about their lives.
I guess so.
Well, why don't we make it a talk show segment then?
All right. Okay.
All right. That's so you three are the view hosts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Minus the terrible one.
I'll be controversial.
Yeah. So wait, do you want to be the terrible one that they always have yelling the contrary thing?
Cuts episodes, like parts of this episode out of context. Yes.
That's true.
All right. And Miles, you're the central host, so take it away.
All right. Well, that is just about going to do it from our remote producer in the kitchen. But we have a very special guest here. Sort of special
being a key word.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
But, I think it is really special. You know, it is really special that they're here. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to catching up.
Absolutely. You know him from Try Guy, and he's spooky, he's fantastic, he's fabulous. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood.
Yes. Hey, what's up, the Chatterboxes?
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of this show.
Yeah, the Chatterboxes, yeah.
And Keith, tell me again, what was your claim to fame to be a host on this?
killed horses until I was 15. I killed the most horses of any 15-year-old.
Oh my God.
Oh, wow.
That's horrible.
And that got you this job.
Yeah. He has 8 million Facebook followers.
I made some books after that, but I think it really started with the horses.
Yeah. The assassination.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah,
because romance novels.
Yeah, I made all my money on romance novels, but I killed a lot of horses before that. I like to think that's why I got famous. Mm. I only sold the book because people knew me as the horse killing author,
the horse killing gal.
Yeah.
Well, Eugene, you've been on the channel a little bit, but you haven't been on the podcast in about 6 months.
No, and I am very excited and honestly like a little nervous to announce several things here for the chatterboxes.
And explosive.
But yeah, I think what I should clarify up top and share this far and wide, ladies, gentlemen, and everyone in between, I'm not leaving the Try Guys. Let's just make that clear. Let's make that explicitly clear. I think that I want to take the time to explain what I am doing and will forever be working on, but also just lay down a little bit of some hard truths, which is Try Guys, I will not leave. I am also working currently on many, many projects that started well before the Try Guys. I think what people don't recognize is that they only see one side of, say, a public-facing personality or group, and most people associate groups with younger teenage pop stars.
Yeah.
Who, of course, when you're 20 and you get an opportunity that's new, something happens where someone leaves. It's a very like tried and true storyline in media and entertainment. That's not what we do here at the Try Guys. Mm-hmm. I started the Try Guys with y'all when I was like almost 30.
Mm-hmm.
So I already had many, many years where I was already working on the projects that I'm currently working on. So in fact, people thinking that working on something else is in some way a signifier of this is now when I leave the Try Guys. I already had added the Try Guys into and on top of the work I was already doing. So I just never really talked about it. I think that's kind of the detriment that was probably my upbringing is, you know, my dad and mom always said, never say things that you are doing unless it's done. You know, they said that you can always talk the talk, but you have to walk the walk. So, you know, I have been notoriously private about a lot of what I've been, you know, developing just because whether it was working for a company where we were worried about, say, them using or taking the IP versus, you know, just not wanting to say that I'm just writing something and then not having it come to fruition.
Right. Because what if you were a failure?
Exactly. That's exactly what my parents would say.
Yeah, well, right. No.
Yeah. No, but interestingly enough, that's true. What I had. My dad always said like there's always someone out there who might work harder than you or succeed faster than you, and you just have to put your head down and you got to work until you have something that you can show for it. So this year, it just so happened that many of my projects came to a place of fruition in which they demanded most of my time. And those that I can tell you now, which is very exciting, as some people have probably already guessed, one is my first feature film.
Wow. Ooh.
Which has been, you know, primarily my dream and my aspirations and my education have been built towards writing and directing. And so I can say that I have been developing with a production company called Killer Films, which is...
Who is that?
Well, it's extremely, extremely exciting because they are, if anything, a powerhouse in the independent production company world. They are, in fact, cited for a lot of the queer cinema movement. And so they produced films like Hedwig and the Angry Inch, Boys Don't Cry, Far From Heaven, the one and only Carol.
Wow.
So I'm really humbled and blessed to be able to have this opportunity. While that's happening at the same time this year, it wasn't just me taking time off to work on the screenplay. I've also been writing my first novel, which is another horse entirely. If anyone out there is.
I know about that.
Yeah, he knows what I'm talking
about. Kill them till they're full grown. That's the rule.
That's right.
But
that's your lightning.
That's horrible.
That's your lightning.
Fiction writing is comes with a whole different set of demands. Mm-hmm. So that has been taking a lot of my time.
Right,
up.
You have to write like a lot of it before you even go out to market with mm-hmm. it.
Quite a lot, yeah.
Some people write even the whole novel.
Yeah,
if you're not as well known, I think Eugene can get away with writing like
a lot bit less.
Several chapters still.
Well, I've been writing it already now for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
Now, whoa. I feel like the writer's lifestyle, typewriter, cold, hard cup of coffee, and like a dimly lit room would suit you very well.
Cold? I do enjoy that.
Well, I meant like a hard, like cold as in like the energy of it, but it is a hot cup of coffee.
It's a hot cup of coffee, but it's sort like of the energy. No sugar.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Harsh.
It's harsh.
I've been glued to my computer for the past year, which has been, you know, really fulfilling. I thrive off of very high effort style projects, even though you might not see it the next day, like we have the opportunity to do on digital. I am very, you know, committed to these stories. And the third thing I also do right now is that I sold a graphic novel, so I'm also writing that.
So cool.
That is cool. I can't tell you more about them right now because of the contracts, but those are three major things that have been happening that are continuing to happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think it's a good time to also express, you know, some lessons I've learned and things that I hope the audience can take from this, which is especially for people who are, you know, striving in those areas as writers or as artists. None of these came easy. You know, all of these projects I started in some way as a story over 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you all have that project you're sitting on since you're like 20, you know, that you want to do. And even with my, I guess, you know, notoriety online, most of the doors I knocked on and the pitches I had to go into for the past 10 years, I still had doors shut on me because it's an uphill battle. Mm-hmm. You know, even though
I'm sure that's inspiring to the audience. Even if you have millions of followers, you still get
that's the truth.
It is the truth.
So keep working.
I think we're so used to seeing, especially for young people these days, they see some digital creators who get so famous that things are in some ways handed to them. And it really isn't the case. Like still people will appraise what I do without knowing me. Mm-hmm. And they'll say it's too weird. It's too left of center. It's too bizarre, which now I am just like, fuck it. That's me. I'm just going to keep running with it. Mm-hmm. But you know, pitching your identity, your unique stories it's a tough process. And it certainly is something that, I am very happy that things are finally coming together at age 35, that I have the opportunity starting to open up. But that took, you know, Keith can probably say the same about his improv and musical comedy career. Like it takes the nights to work it. It takes the time after the job to really put in the work. And that's something I think everyone can relate to and hopefully know that eventually opportunities will open up. But even for me, it's been really difficult. And I think, especially in worlds like fiction and traditional TV and film, like what they will look at in the end is the story and they'll look at your vision, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Coming back to it then, Try Guys will always be a part of my work. I think it's just that this was a moment where the sheer magnitude of opportunity I have, I just have to tackle it. Mm-hmm. And so while I won't be back on the channel in a permanent sense, as some might want, as in every video or tripod, I'm going to continue to try to come back as much as possible in whatever free time I have. And of course, to honor large series and, you know, fun things whenever we want to just hang out. And hopefully I'll come back more to the tripod as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that if I can find the free time, I want to make sure that I still honor one of my best relationships, which is with everyone listening, which is our audience. Because the big thing is that, you know, these are, I keep reiterating, like these are passions of mine that have never died. And the only reason they were kind of put to the side or on the back burner over the past 7 years is because I actually love working with the Try Guys and I really love our audience. There's really no other reason. If I didn't like my friends, I would have never started a company with them, you know? So I just kind of want people to know, I might not be in every video, but I'm there in spirit. And I hope that it's a really wonderful opportunity for us to, you know, make good on a lot of things we've talked about, which is try to platform more diverse voices and have different, you know, people that are amazing get their stars risen like Miles over here, so we can, you know, introduce the world to people who are just like at the very least good to their core and ready to try something new. So yeah, I think it's exciting for everyone all around.
As a person who, like, when you were a little boy, you dreamed of writing, I'm sure, writing novels, writing graphic novels, making movies.
Yeah.
Do you have a little bit of that thing that now, like, the things that you started working on so long ago as a little kid, and you're like, oh, that tiny, like, piece of what I wanted to do is now coming to fruition?
Dude, it's so weird because so much of it, well, some of these things are semi-autobiographical. And, of course, everything I do is both very Asian American and very, very, very queer. But the, especially in the fictional universe and like fiction writing, I can't tell you what it is, unfortunately, but there is a lot of wonderful ideas that were probably planted when I was extremely young, like middle school, high school, that make it into even a story over 20 years later. It's really bizarre.
Yeah.
Like I that's why I think that even if you have, you know, you think that everything is shit that you do when you're 8 and then when you're 18 and then when you're in college or whatever you're doing in your day job, those things matter. They build blocks towards what eventually will hopefully be that Olympus that is the first like major piece of writing or literature or film or media that you publish. So yeah, it's kind of wonderful. It's weird how I think a lot of it is becoming so, and this is kind of like a bottom line too, because I didn't want to make people feel like, oh God, he's where he is and he still gets doors closed on him. That's just the industry. And I'm still like a gay Asian man running around with a crazy idea. It's not like people are like, let's hand him something. It's the feeling of being able to walk into those situations with the utmost confidence in your story. And that's what I also feel like I lacked. And I think a lot of people who are really young don't necessarily have yet the full grasp of every angle of the story because they're still living it. So I'm just very happy to be in a place where I can kind of walk into any room and say, this is exactly what I want from A to Z in this film or in this novel. And y'all can take it or leave it.
Yeah.
No clapping necessary.
I think that's inspiring to a lot of young artists out there because it's really tough to do creative projects like that, especially bigger things, and to try and understand how you might even break in. But developing that sense of confidence in yourself and your story so that you can, you know, walk into these rooms and sell it to people wholeheartedly, I think is really awesome. So yeah, that's our plan, is Eugene will be dropping in on the tripod intermittently, and then we'll be block shooting some of our major series together and videos throughout. You may have noticed that
Keith
just put his whole hand in his
housing.
Mouth.
How do y'all do podcasts? How do y'all do podcasts while y'all are eating?
We never have food. I'm so excited.
We don't always.
We got a big day today.
We had donuts sometimes. These are flaky foods.
It's just hard to eat. It's really falling apart. And
I was so sorry to interrupt, Ned. Continue.
What was I saying?
You were saying something really wonderful.
Kind of intermittently, we like not every video has the four of us in it anymore. Anyways, we do some solo Keith projects on the net, whatever. But we're going to be testing out new faces on the channel at Tri Team, as you've already seen. And we'll make an effort to have, you know, these hero videos and hero series with the four of us so that it's exactly what you know and love. And an exciting thing that we can announce is, on November, 20 something, basically this November, we have Without a Recipe coming back, holiday series.
Oh yeah.
Howdy.
All four of us making crazy things. And it'll be very, very exciting. We also are filming a bunch of videos today. So,
He's got to eat to be ready for it.
Yeah.
He's got 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. day today.
Oh, hot. That's a long day.
That's right. Big day.
Big day.
And I think it'd be helpful for me to be from now on more transparent with the audience.
Yeah.
Because now that I've reached a certain point where I can talk more about these things, hopefully that'll be helpful. We don't want to make it amorphous or mysterious.
Yeah.
Because if you know if I'm off literally in production for a film, then just know that doesn't mean I won't be back. In fact, I would love to take a break and come back and hang out with everyone.
Yeah.
But it's, I think that's just the reality of what life and work is. And sometimes you won't always see your best friend. But your best friend is never really gone, you know?
That's right.
Because they were never really there.
Because
we've been having this way of working where we just kind of are shooting like every couple of days and we're all like in the office all the time. And I think we're going to be moving towards, especially as we are each getting more busy, you know, where we have different professional conflicts, where we'll take like 2 or 3 weeks to shoot a lot. And then take a month where we aren't shooting as much, right? Because it's just, I don't think we're going to have that ability to just be getting videos every once in a while. So, but if we shoot like 10 videos in a week or 20 videos in 2 weeks, like that's a lot of content.
That's a lot of content, baby. That's a lot of horses.
And we can start a new segment where we just FaceTime you and see if you pick up on the podcast.
It's too busy.
Too busy today.
What's the last sentence you wrote?
Maybe sometimes he'll be pooping and then he can kind of pick up.
I usually respond to texts faster.
Okay, yeah.
FaceTimes and calls make me nervous.
Not just surprise FaceTimes.
I get that.
There's nothing more intense than surprise FaceTime from someone you haven't spoken to in 3 months.
Like, I love it.
Why is this happening to me?
I love it. That's like running into them at the grocery store.
It's like running into them in your bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, what the fuck are you doing here? Get out of my bathroom.
What's the writing project that you've found like the most surprising, the most difficult, and the most fun?
Ooh, okay. So I have to say hands down, the novel.
Yeah.
Across the board. Because, you know, I studied screenwriting, which actually, if you are interested in screenwriting, there's actually a very specific format you write in. You can't go on into flights of fancy. There's no like necessary like internal explanations of characters, you know, when they're doing any sort of your character building is essentially a very show don't tell. And it's the opposite in an open world for fiction.
You could just dive off into their own thoughts and emotions for
exactly. And then you also are establishing both your writer's style and then on top of that, whatever genre you're writing in has its own set of demands. So it's been extremely fulfilling, though I will tell you that it's just been essential, like hours upon hours upon hours of researching and mulling over just like one tiny little thing that'll then expand into a million different branches. And that's been really wonderful from a creative perspective. But again, it's like, I think something like writing a fiction novel is one of the most prime examples of like high effort, small reward.
Is it like what they say where you write like 5 times as much as you actually use?
Oh yeah, exactly. I have like maybe thousands of pages now of just things I've been jotting down that probably won't ever make it in. And I think that's been, I like operating that way. I don't think everyone wants to do that in an artistic sense. It's like, it's not very great for general time management, but it is part of the process, I think, of writing stories. And so the freeing aspect of that is really, really cool and fulfilling. I think if anyone's ever just like trying to get in touch with themselves as a writer, then writing in the fiction space is really cool just to be seeing like exactly what you would put on the page if you were given like complete freedom to do what you like. Obviously I really love writing film and TV, but that does have structures that you have to follow.
Yeah.
So,
and you're also writing with some, I mean, everyone would love to write a blue sky $500 billion budget movie, but like there's this dance you're doing between what you're putting on paper and the dollars that you know it's going to cost on screen. And like, you know, you might get asked to do a rewrite that takes out this plane driving into a hangar to, you know.
Right. So we can't afford that. Could a nice car drive into a garage? Yeah.
I mean, it's an interesting conundrum that especially affects film. Like you watch those how these movies were made. Uh-huh. You hear the story of, say, Back to the Future, mm-hmm. the iconic scene in front of Town Hall with the clock and mm-hmm. the lighting that originally in the script was a nuclear test site.
Mm. Oh
yeah.
Wow!
Yeah, but movies then they said, "Hey, we don't have the budget for that."
Yeah,
so they said, oh, "Fuck! Well, I guess we'll do something clever here on the set we have," and it turned out to be one of the most iconic scenes in movie history.
And you can go in Universal Studios.
Yeah,
go by the clock.
There's something wonderful about like the constraints that that the commerce side of art does provide. Mm-hmm. There's a lot about that is totally shitty and I hate dealing with, but some of those budgetary constraints end up leading to more brilliance, which is cool. True.
We love your personal story about being gay and Asian, but we were thinking maybe setting it in a Midwestern town with white people.
Keith, are you going to take a poop? Or?
Thoughts?
I need a tissue. Why are there no tissues?
Oh, there's a disinfectant.
I can't blow my nose with that.
Okay, cool. Here's a question.
Are you suggesting that he blows his nose with a disinfectant?
It's going to kill the...
Oh my God. Save it really for the advice. Oh my God.
Here's a question. And I've always wondered, mm-hmm. you're writing this thing. I'm a billion pages at this point.
Yeah.
Microsoft Word or Google Docs or what?
Oh, that's a good question.
Microsoft Word.
Microsoft Word.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so but there's
so you can track changes or
the
not?
Hard thing about the publishing world is the, there's like the spacing rules. Yeah, so everything is also like spaced out. Mm-hmm. I have always had the issue of overwriting, which is good in literature, but the going from 1 point space to two or 1.5 at least is like really throws me off just because what is two pages becomes four pages. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just have to like alter that in
my
head.
They want everything in double space?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Or 1.5 at least, depending on the doc.
So that sounds like a good high school project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Courier new.
I know, right? Yeah, just like size 12 and a half font.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think for sure anything more traditional or conventional in the space, I don't think anyone's writing a novel in Google Doc unless...
Because there's like, that's a good point. I just I only use Google. I don't even use
there's
Word.
There's some like notes functions that are very akin to what Google Doc adapted in Microsoft Word mm-hmm. that I've only discovered through this process that the editor will bring back and be like, oh, this, and
wait,
I'm like,
what
oh,
software
wow, that's
do
really
you say
cool.
you're writing in?
Word. Hmm?
Still exists.
Word still exists.
I love Microsoft Word.
We used it for our book.
I mean, I like it.
I think Google Docs is cleaner, but I get that Word is more functional, probably. This
also,
is such a boring conversation. Better. We got to move on.
No. Hold on.
And also, the standard is still Times New Roman.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No Calibri happening. Yeah.
The serifs are out of control.
I think it's time for a new Roman.
Uh-huh.
Times New Age Roman.
Just think, if the Romans conquered America, it wouldn't be New York.
It'd be New Rome. How do you think they would have gotten here?
I had a harrowing weekend, you guys.
Okay.
So we were filming one of our biggest projects.
Let me grab a pastry.
Yeah, just grab a cookie.
Oh my God.
Keith is going to eat all the pastries.
I worked out yesterday. Now I'm hungry.
Okay. We filmed our first travel job in 2 years. Mm-hmm. We had this opportunity to go up to a professional diving facility in San Francisco, jump off the tallest high dive in California. It's like a 10-meter platform, which is 33 feet. And we were going to train in a facility with like... you know, trampolines and bungee cords mm-hmm. where you can actually learn how to flip and rotate your body. And we were going to do actual flips off of a giant high dive.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was going to be me and Zach, and then Zach wasn't available. Mm-hmm. Keith was out of town. Eugene was writing. So then it was just me. It was me and Michelle Carre and Ryan Garcia. It was going to be this cool group of thrill seekers.
Yeah.
Just out here trying to do this thing. But it was like a big deal production-wise, right? Mm-hmm. We had drones. Our PA drove a van all the way up full of gear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we fly like 10 people out, staying in a hotel, like, up, you know, huge, huge production. A lot of moving parts. And Rachel had been working on it for months. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we get to the point where we're shooting. I am like in my bathing suit. I'm getting myself psyched up. Keith is mashing down
I'm
on
eating.
This.
Why are they here if I'm not going to eat them? Excuse me.
Well, I want
interruption. Sorry, Ned.
That's all right.
Why are there pastries if I'm not supposed to eat them?
I just love watching covert eating and like really sensitive mics.
He's just trying to be very
I have to keep the mic close in case I need to add on to the story. You know what I'm saying?
Sorry, continue.
We met our diver expert. He was awesome. We were going to get ready to, you know, we're seeing people jump off these platforms and like, ugh. And right as I'm about to go on for my first interview, it's like, we've traveled the day before. Everyone's all ready. All the cameras are on. Rachel comes up to me and she says, hey, can you turn off your mic for a second? And that is usually code for, I have to tell you something very serious. So serious, in fact, that I don't want the sound mixer to hear it.
Yeah,
and I'm like, what could this possibly be? Oh God! Also, I'm unfamiliar with this style of mic pack. It's gonna take me a sec to figure out how to turn it off. So I figured out.
I threw the mic in the pool.
And right as we're about to go, Rachel says, "Hey, one of our team members tested positive for COVID. What do you want to do?" And I'm like, oh my God, here I'm in my bathing suit poolside having to suddenly make a massive decision that's going to like have a lot of ripples where we've like gotten all these people to San Francisco, but, and there's like a lot of uncertainty about COVID. Like, what does it mean? So we identified like who were close contacts. And it is actually like a lot of our crew.
And for background, on our sets, all crew is masked the whole time.
All crew is masked the whole
time. And talent is only
our entire company is vaccinated.
And tested before big shoots.
Right. Yeah.
Even when
we
work in the office, everyone works distanced now. Mm-hmm. Most of the time wears masks, I would say, unless they're fully distanced away, you know?
Yeah. So despite all that, we had a breakthrough positive case. And now all of a sudden, what do we do? We're in the middle of this thing. Do we cancel the shoot? Do we try and get like negative tests? If we try and get negative tests, they won't come back until the day is basically over. Mm-hmm. Like, what do we do? Are we supposed to like pull out the people who are close contacts? Well, that's 3/4 of the crew. How are we going to do that without it? And even though it is potentially could have been possible for us to rush tests and then keep filming a little bit the way that the day was structured, the dangerous stuff is what we were going to be doing the next day, but we needed to have the training on the bungee cords and the trampolines in order to do the dangerous stuff. So even though we could have gotten all, a bunch of tests, and if it all comes back negative, we keep proceeding and do the dangerous stuff the next day, then it would be dangerous.
Yeah, right.
For a different reason. So I made the difficult decision to cancel the whole shoot.
But the right decision.
You pulled the crank that said stop on a giant.
It was really disappointing.
You were Spider-Man. Yeah.
And it felt awful.
Grabbing all the buildings and stopping that L train. Saying no.
No.
Yeah. I got to save the train.
Yeah. Somebody make that meme. Ned says so, Spider-Man.
Everyone packed up their equipment, separated. Mm-hmm. We got tests for everyone. Wait, ate tender greens in their own hotel room. it was really sad. And it turns out it was the right decision because everyone was negative except for one person.
Yeah.
Who was positive. Mm-hmm. So that means there was a little bit of a spread from that one person to the second person.
Yeah.
Right.
And if we had kept shooting, it would have continued to put other people at risk. And these are both two people who are vaccinated. So it's kind of like
breakthrough
cases.
Now, I was in Tennessee when this went down. I also got the text as someone who was in proximity in the week before. But I was at, hilariously, a little Jewish deli in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Eating a big old Reuben. It was so delicious. And then I got it and I was like, fuck. Because I had just done 2 shows, you know, and I've, you know, and like, so I've just sung at a bunch of people. So I'm like, okay, I got to get a test right now. We had a show that night. And if I obviously, depending on how I text, we'd have to cancel the show.
Yeah.
So I find a rapid clinic, a little minute clinic nearby. And let me tell you, I have had maybe 75, maybe even 100 COVID tests at this point. Nobody has fucked my face with a Q-tip harder than this woman in Chattanooga. I swear, this woman has never done this before, or she's trying to instill in people to never have to get a test again. Because I left and my nose hurt for about 5 hours.
Whoa. Oh,
like she she went like, like a drill. Like she turned her hand into a little drill.
Was it the brain one where they went all deep or just exterior?
It was supposed to be a normal one.
They fucked his brain out the side of his skull.
And they just went hard. I mean, it was so intense. And Alex Lewis was there. And I like, I went, oh, because I made a noise. And Alex is like, you made a noise. I'm like, yeah, man, that fucking hurts. She just hurt me. She like hated me or something.
Maybe she knew who you were. Writing all those horse killing novels.
That's true. They do love their horses in Tennessee. And then it was negative. Thank goodness. We continued there. And I had the craziest Saturday ever. The craziest Saturday. Because it started with us going to Chattanooga, and finding a Jewish deli at all in Tennessee to me is a miracle.
Huge.
And it was really good. And then we went to Carthage, the town that I grew up in. I took Lou Berger to see Robert, to see my old house that I grew up in, the woods I would play in as a child. Wow. Drove him around to see the church I went to, the grocery store I went to, where the old Walmart was. Mm. All that is like a mile of town. So that was it. And then we went to Nashville, ate at a popular Arnold's Meat and Three. And they gave us like one of everything. It was like an eat the menu shoot. We just got one of everything. So Meat and Three is a Southern tradition where it's normally a buffet style restaurant. Or I shouldn't say buffet, but...
meat and three sides?
Yeah, you got it.
And
you shouldn't say buffet. You really shouldn't.
It's not a buffet because it's, what do you call it when you walk down and people serve you food?
What's wrong with saying
a
buffet?
I don't know.
No, it's the kind where people serve you food and you pay for only the amount of food you bought.
A lunch cafeteria style.
Boston kitchen style. Mm-hmm. It's cafeteria style and you get one protein and three sides. Now you can get as many of whatever you want, but typically people get one protein and two to three sides. So it's called the Meat and Three. We ate a bunch of delicious Southern food, went on to do a very, very fun show that started at 10:30. It was our last show of our tour, PM. So we finished at midnight. And then we were like hanging out in, and everybody who came to that show had to be vaccinated and tested. So that was very nice. And then we hung out with some local comics until 2:00. But then, of course, it was daylight savings. So then we were allowed to keep staying because those bars do the thing where they just stay open another hour because now it's 1:00 again. So we were out until 3:00.
They like briefly locked the doors and then immediately opened them again.
And then we got home and, somehow we ended up not going to bed until like 5:30 in the morning. We weren't doing anything.
Which is crazy.
That meant it was 6:30 in the morning.
Yes. It was the longest. The life. And I never stay up late.
Yeah.
I don't know how I had the power and the strength. It was just a magical Tennessee day. Wow. And it was also the first time I've drank more than like 3 or 4 drinks in a while. So I was feeling lit. I had some weed, which is not legal in Tennessee, but I don't care. I had a great time.
That's a blast. I haven't had a long night party like that. I guess since my wedding.
I know, right? But other than like, I'd say your wedding was probably the last party I did.
Right. That's so fun.
I guess that was a month ago.
That was a month ago. I love, man. I love partying.
I don't
know. Bro.
I don't think I've been in my hometown in a really long time.
Yeah, you gotta go.
I go to Austin, but I don't go to my hometown.
Right, right.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Flugerville. Shout out to anyone.
Flugerville.
Who lives in Flugerville.
Well, speaking of going back home, Eugene, because you're back in the studio.
Oh, shit.
And you've been, on the tripod for a few months or so.
Yeah.
I thought we would do a special little segment called Eugene. What does this mean?
Okay.
Where we kind of get
like
your piping hot take on pop culture that's transpired in your absence.
I like hot takes.
Eugene, what does this mean, Leanne? J-Lo and Bennifer, they're back and better than ever. Thoughts?
Oh, so y'all talked about these.
Kind of.
J-Lo and Bennifer.
J-Lo and Bennifer.
Sorry.
The one and a half J-Los.
Bennifer and Jaffleck.
Good for them.
Yeah.
I think that if I take the celebrity context out of it, what is crazy is that they had a whirlwind romance in like 2001 or something.
Yeah.
And then they broke up, both had marriages and kids,
yeah,
and then got back together 20 years later.
Wow.
So if that was like your friends,
yeah,
I think that if I took them, the celebrity and the all the shit around mm-hmm. that, I'd be like, oh, wow, that's pretty, pretty magical in a weird way. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know them personally, but I think it's just a cool.
I'm just trying to imagine me getting together with my high school, like freshman year, not senior, freshman year girlfriend. But they were
like adults when they were first together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Hollywood adults, though. You never know how old they are.
But Ben Affleck seems happy.
I mean, like, he's not, I don't see as many Dunkin' Donuts photos as we used to.
I feel like the culture has really turned around on Ben Affleck and in a good way. The people like him now.
Yeah, we like him now.
The minute he was with J-Lo, everything changed.
Yeah. So good for them.
Halo effect.
I have a question for the room. Mm-hmm. When will the boat paparazzi start taking pictures of me semi-naked on a boat? How does that photo happen?
I hear you. Yeah.
Where are the boat paparazzi? And how do they get so many salacious photos of celebrities hanging out on boats?
Probably when people start reading about you in the New York Post.
I know that'll happen to me, but I want to know how the boat paparazzi know...
Well, I think they have to, are they
just cruising?
The paparazzi makes money by selling photos to magazines.
Well, I know that, but how do they know that they're going to be on a boat that day?
Oh, because I don't know. I know sometimes they call and say, hey, I'm going here.
Yeah, it's either stalking or the publicist will actually, you know,
make it happen.
But I think if you're at the level of someone like Jennifer Lopez, they were following
people
her
are just always following you no matter what.
And I believe the famous photo you're talking about that she later then parodied in a music video is Ben kissing her booty on the top of a yacht, and that
pretty hot
as yachts go. That's probably like near the somewhat near the shore, so a very long lens could probably capture it.
I missed that one.
Kissing a booty.
I'm gonna be googling that a little bit.
No, guys, everyone knows this. Jenny from the block.
Can you put it up on the big screen?
Yeah,
let's see the booty.
I will say that I can maybe a try guys video is you guys leak your nudes to the paparazzi.
That's already on the internet.
And just see if they do anything with that.
Let it to the original paparazzi.
Or like we could
hire our publicist to like
get
the paparazzi to take photos of us, maybe.
It's a good video.
Yeah.
Hiring paparazzi.
But paparazzi are no longer really as, I mean, if you think about it, not to get dark, and this is actually pop cultural, but as a gay, you know, the Free Britney movement.
Right.
A lot of that is also paparazzi centered and how terrible they were, how awful they were.
Bad.
And so paparazzi culture overall is petering out. Like, I know one of the last vestiges of it was essentially like a lot of what went down with Britney Spears. And I mean, we're seeing like way too many Princess Diana adaptations right now, but again, a very clear example of
how... Do you think that's because celebrities and influencers are taking control of the posting, like they're giving so much content of themselves by themselves.
No one's private anymore.
Yeah.
So like essentially the existence of Instagram.
You're like, what am I going to do with this? I don't even care about this blurry photo of a celebrity from.
Because everyone's their own PR now. So it's exclusive photos now are no longer, I think, paparazzi driven. It's more Meghan and Harry had a baby. Who are they selling it to?
Who are they selling it to? That's a good story.
But you know, that's where they make a lot of the money now, is just like more legit photography. Exclusives.
Right. All right, we got to do a rapid round on a couple of these.
That was actually a very introspective answer.
That was really good.
Wow. Miles, could you ever do like a Family Feud style like PowerPoint for us so we play Family Feud?
Absolutely.
In here? We put it up there.
I want to come back for that.
Steve Harvey and go survey.
I am still waiting on the Ben Affleck.
You want me to pull up the booth?
No, guys, this is so... You guys don't remember this? No.
Ben Affleck fart Ned picture.
And I want to see it. I want to see it, too.
Is Zach the only one who knows pop culture?
Yeah.
I know pop culture. I'm tuned in to the movement.
Okay, ask the next one, Miles.
Movement?
Megan Fox and MGK. What's up with that?
Gene Ben Kelly.
Good for them.
Yeah, I love it.
I mean, what I like about it is that I think Megan Fox was also... generally horribly treated by the public. Yeah, so definitely. I like that people are coming back. I did also see her at the Met Gala, which was cool.
Did you say hi?
Yeah, I did.
What?
Because we were standing. I have way too many casual Met Gala conversation stories, but we'll save it for another time.
Yeah.
But It does help when you're a man in makeup who's clearly just having the blast, just walking up to people being like, hi.
Oh,
and they're
the
just
best.
Like, hey.
next time can you go when you go to the Met Gala, can you make a video called I Went to the Met Gala and Mispronounced Everyone's Name?
Hi, Megan Fox.
Hi, Megan.
Hey, Megan.
Mugen Fax.
Mugen Fox.
No, but like, you know, good for them.
Yeah, I think
I have known very little about MGK, so.
You don't need to know
I
much.
I just know that he had a feud with Eminem, and good for them. If they're happy, they're happy. Whatever.
I was at one of the Black Lives Matter protests last year, and he was marching near us.
That's cool.
So,
you know, I think he's
that was a good thing.
He's interesting.
I don't know him. I really don't know if I know any of his music, but by his name, I think I wouldn't like it. But then I hear it's not very intense at all. But Machine Gun Kelly makes me think it's going to be hard.
SNL. And it was less intense than I thought. More melodic.
Like Machine Gun Kelly. That's a pretty intense name.
It's pretty intense, I would say. So up next for this one, we have a little bit of some info.
Oh my gosh.
So
this is...
You never saw this?
So no. First of all, this is the...
I remember this.
Yeah. This is the Ben Affleck butt picture.
I mean, that's just... They didn't hire somebody to take that? That's just real...
I don't know. These are pretty salacious.
I mean, these are well-composed...
Yeah, like, look at this. Are you talking about this one butt picture?
Well, this is the remake that they did.
Oh, they did for fun?
Yeah.
No way.
That was recently, I think.
No, that was just them, later on a boat.
I thought that was them...
Look at that!
Recently having fun and recreating the...
Huh.
The moment.
Good for them.
I
Good
love
for
it.
Them.
I think this is really fun.
All right, give me the next hot
topic.
Okay,
so up next.
Jeez.
We're going to react to this TikTok here.
Oh,
and
boy.
Because it's next. This next one is about Pete Davidson and Kim Kardashian.
Uh-huh.
And I have some thoughts, but also here's some thoughts here.
Are they an item?
This remains to be seen, but this is sort of some info, Eugene, and I'd love your insight on this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go.
All right.
I've only ever honestly been attracted to like 4 men in my life, so I do think I'm the one to settle this. This man, he's attractive. He's also a complete disaster, but he is very attractive to a very specific woman. This woman is likely an overachiever of some sort. She's probably successful, but regardless, she's definitely overloaded in some way. Never know it though, because she pulls it off incredibly well. And she also knows what the fuck she's doing. When she doesn't, she phones an expert. So she gets home, the last thing she needs is anyone explaining anything.
That's right.
Her. This man has never said the words "you don't understand" to a woman before in his life. He's fully aware of the disaster he is. He doesn't come home from a day of being trash and criticize dinner like he didn't just spend the day being trash. When she has her moments where she melts down because life is just fucking hard that way, he just has support, not suggestions. Because he knows what most men don't, that he doesn't fucking know. This man is a disaster, but what makes him hot is that he knows he's a disaster.
Thoughts?
Huh.
That's a good take, I think.
I feel like it's certainly all supposition. Like it's not corroborated by any evidence, but
yeah.
I think that, someone tweeted recently that the Pete Davidson Machine Gun Kelly type is like the manic pixie dream girl for boys.
Yes, I think that's true.
So it's someone who seems really wild and off the beaten path, but it's actually very sweet and accessible.
Yeah.
So, and very white at the same time.
Yeah,
but I think that's one Pete and Kim, good for them.
I think that's funny.
Yeah,
interesting.
But I think there's clearly something like Pete's probably very sweet or nice or charming to them, and he's also like an attractive person in general. So
yeah,
whatever. Good for them.
I think his
story
hot.
Was convincing.
I think so too. I think it makes sense.
That does make sense.
Yeah.
But he could also just be like, I don't know, fucking hot dude that women are attracted to. Like,
doesn't he also have like a massive peener?
Well, now here's the thing about the massive peener.
Big dick energy.
Probably does. But massive peener doesn't make the boy.
No, I'm just saying, but I think these women know that he has a massive penis.
Do you think that that's really what's going around?
Yes.
You think that everyone's just like, I hear he has a big hog?
Miles, I've heard of it.
didn't he coin the term big dick energy?
Or he was the source of a lot of it.
He was the source of that entire idea.
The movement.
I bet if you type in,
from
I bet if you go to Google search right now,
yeah,
and you type in Pete Davidson.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
One of the top five suggestion things will be dick penis related. Some maybe even peener. Probably not peener.
Pete Davidson.
I try to use the word peener as much as possible.
We got net worth. We got height.
You have to hit it.
We're talking the autocomplete.
Here we go. Pete Davidson, height, girlfriend, tattoo.
Where's the dick?
Dang.
I was wrong.
So you're just disgusting.
All right.
Maybe. No, well, you are. Miles somewhat correct big about dick the conversation, energy. But I think
that we might get some porn.
No, we won't.
Big dick. My boss is telling me to search big dick.
Wow, you know, you're right. You're big.
Big dick energy. Dick. Make sure you add the energy.
Big Googling big dick. Who started saying big dick energy?
There you go.
Pete Davidson. Wow.
Pete Davidson's penis gets most of the credit for putting big dick energy on the map. I would say if a common phrase is inspired by a man's peener, that man has a big peener.
Yeah.
I think it specifically was a photo that Ariana Grande is like looking up at him while she has like this lollipop. And I think that was the one that really catapulted the coinage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the primary reason women get with him.
No,
I don't think it's the primary reason.
Secondary. But tertiary?
I think it's in the first five Google search results.
And lastly, Eugene, I need your thoughts on just sort of the Timothée Chalamet that we're going through right now.
Oh, yeah.
Wonka Dune.
Good for him. I also talked to him, too.
You did?
Yeah.
Was he weird?
No, he was cool.
Okay, cool.
We also were in the bathroom, so it was like very casual.
That's Timothée Chalamet. So nice to meet you.
But I think he's a good actor. So
I think so too.
I think that's great. And I like that, you know, between him and Tom Holland, like there's some talented young men doing their thing.
Yeah. I think he has to go down to call it a renaissance.
That's a good point.
You know, I feel like he's just been like,
oh,
he's just been straight up.
Yeah. Are they young or are they just tiny?
No, he is these men. He is small of frame, but he does like spark a certain thing like young Leo, you know, like it's a very like kind of like Victorian child aesthetic.
He does look like a Victorian person.
Can we Google how tall he is?
He is, Timothée Chalamet.
On the screen.
Are you doing these?
No, just do it on your thumbs.
Timothée Chalamet height, he's 6'1".
No, he's not.
He's 5'9 to 6'1".
No,
that's a big range. He was probably 5'9.
A classic actors put lies on the internet saying they're taller.
So he's 5'9".
And I've said this before, but I'd like to see him pack on 30 lbs of muscle, just neck. Have a thick neck.
Just on the neck?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd like to see that. Neck and shoulders.
I just would like to see him be unbelievably yoked.
I think actors will probably do that
once they hit like 35.
Right, exactly.
But no. Good for him. He's in really good movies.
Yeah, I think so too.
You asked me a Squid Game? Wasn't that one of them?
Squid Game!
Yeah. What about it?
I have so many thoughts about Squid Game.
Same.
Name the main character's name.
Yeah, that's... I'm so sorry. But
contestant 456.
Name any of the characters' names.
Contestant number one.
Gambu. Not a character's name at all.
That's something that I'm still fascinated by,
which is we read
the subtitles and we actually are constantly reading their names. And yet the only character most people know in the Western world is Ali. They'll be like, oh, Ali. And then, the girl or hot cop or the main dude.
Right.
And there's something in particular about Korean names that people still don't. They won't register it. And it's so interesting to me. And it kind of harkened back to like, you know, the fact that all my, you know, Korean relatives, my mother and stuff, my mother's name is Min Young. She goes by Min. Father's name is Jae Hong. He goes by Jay. So it's like, and some of them just have American names. And I always wondered, oh, why would you do that? And my mom was always like, because no one's going to remember Min Young. And I was like, it's so easy to remember.
Yeah, right.
It's two syllables. But something about the hyphen throws people off.
Yeah.
I think so. Often I worry that I'm going to mispronounce it. And so I'm like, oh, you know,
No, but that was one big thing. But watching it, even like with Matt, was a totally different experience for me.
Right.
Even as a Korean American, because I'm not from Korea, but I'm very Korean culturally. So there were small like details that were very particular that I know there are a lot of like think piece videos and articles about it.
Sure.
And I don't think the translation was terrible. Yeah. It was just like it's the problem with translating any language or culture into English is really difficult. But yeah, I thought it was really interesting because I had a lot of different takeaways after episodes.
Yeah. I mean, the American actors were so egregiously horrible.
Comically bad.
It felt like a choice.
Yeah. Like I'm wondering, were those just actors that were in Korea when they were casting it? And there's not that many like white actors like that are older.
It could have been a combination. I feel like because a lot of it was also the writing that it was a choice.
Yeah.
Because they were like campishly villainous.
It was written, the rest of it was written so well.
It was six to nine. Oh, that's my number for reasons. Where's my cigar and my wine and whiskey and the butt? Where's the butt boy?
It's so funny is that when I was watching
I'm an
it,
imperialist.
I never thought, like, this is such bad acting. I just thought, this is ridiculous. It didn't translate to me as bad acting because it seemed like it was purposefully ridiculous.
I ended up taking it better just because I was looking at it in the full context of the show. But it's also because the core acting is so good.
You're right, exactly.
Of course.
That you get flipped. But it's interesting. I watch so many, like I watch all most of the Netflix like East Asian shows. We watched Alice in Borderland. Mm-hmm. We watched Kingdom. I watched the previous or the new My Name K-drama, which is really good. Yeah.
The zombie.
Kingdom. So it's interesting because they're all really great. And when I watched Squid Game, I watched it like the first 2 days after it came out. And then I didn't talk about it because I was like, no one's going to talk about it. No one talked to me about the other K-dramas that came out.
I know it's
no. Eugene just texts Becky and I because we're I'm the like, ones who
watch
will,
this.
Who will watch it because we so really I was, liked Alice in Borderlands.
Everyone was really surprised when it did super well.
It was number one in 90 countries. Or
That's almost all of them.
Most watched show in Netflix history.
I think that was also why it was fun to watch because it was like, one, it's just about how like, capitalism's a nightmare, but then also it's just that everyone in the world was watching it. It was so cool.
I think it hit the
it's like Pokemon Go.
Yeah. It hit the capitalism nerve. Just like Pokemon Go. The capitalism nerve was for sure there, but I also think that I mean we've seen many survival dramas, like from Battle Royale all the way up to the Renaissance in the early 2000s of Hunger Games and Maze Runner, etc. But I think the part of this was also the design. Was what grabbed people.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, it was visually beautiful. It wasn't and wild.
Yeah, it was dystopian mentally, but it was like not physically.
Like
it was
pop art.
It was pop art.
It was cartoonish,
and in ways, I think that really spoke to, especially like this generation's like the tastes. Mm-hmm. It was very brightly colored, which I think made it more sick in the end.
Don't you just want to go to a place with so many staircases and just run around?
Oh, that was my favorite set. Yeah,
I was like, I want
all the doors that open to nowhere.
Where do you, how do you get from that staircase to that staircase? I can't wait to find out.
We have our Squid Games in real life video coming out Saturday.
Yeah.
Keith is a giant robot girl.
I'm the robot girl.
I thought you looked like Nigel Thornberry. From the Wild Thornberries.
I think the mustache throws off the look.
Well, it's the mustache and I saw the orange, so I just like kind of, I was like, who does he remind me of right now? You would make a great Nigel Thornberry.
I can't do the voice though. Ned would be better for the voice if he was familiar with the cartoon.
Only vaguely.
Oh, he wasn't a Nicktoon boy.
Yeah.
Is that Dora the Explorer's dad? No.
No. No, but you know.
Could be.
Some similarities.
Anyway, everyone go look up the characters' names.
Nigel Thornberry!
Is that perfect?
Not the worst, not the actually. Worst.
It's kind of similar to your tone.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe some of our listeners need some advice. Maybe it could be related to impressions, but probably not. And, you know, we got a good old advice giver here. It's Miles. Advice will go for Miles with Miles.
Welcome back, Eugene. This one's going to be fucking huge.
You waited till now to start eating? That thing has been there
your only segment
for so long. And now
you have one job.
Now you're eating?
Now you're eating.
A little more.
Have you guys seen that SNL guy that does the impressions?
Which guy?
James Austin Johnson.
Oh, he's amazing.
Oh, he's really good.
Okay, here we go. All right,
shut the fuck up.
What's up, Miles Nation? How y'all doing tonight?
Woo. Yeah.
Applause.
Have you ever wanted to relax?
Yeah. Are you going to talk about a float tank? Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to go to the mall, but the mall, the mall is made of meat.
I'm sorry, of what?
Meat.
The mall is made of meat.
That's never happened.
And mayo, and pickle, and pizza, and cold, cold beer, colder than you've ever tasted.
Mm. Oh, you're talking about that Italy restaurant, the Italy store shop, right?
Have you ever wanted to go to another land?
Yeah, it's going to be about Italy.
Experience the cuisine of rice.
Oh.
That was a twist.
Maybe. And sushi.
Oh, boy.
And watermelon and candies. Mm. And you want to walk from one culture to the next.
always talking about Epcot.
With the...
or just like your general downtown like bazaar that has all the different restaurants.
What if I could tell you... What if I could told you that...
Is your advice to walk down the street?
What if I could told you
go
that...
Go to a city.
Go to a city and walk down the street.
Go to a New York city.
What if I could told you that you can do all that from the comfort of your own store?
The grocery store? You're telling us to go to a grocery store? Because that is believably...
Sometimes I do.
Never been
little...
down to the aisle that has...
Sometimes I'll go on a staycation at my local grocery store.
Wow.
And I'm asking for you to go. Don't have an agenda, Ned. I know Ned's going to go with an agenda. Go.
Yeah, I feel that too. He's going to be like, I need this and this and this.
Go with a list even.
Don't even go with a list. Because if you have a list, you're a chump. And if you go with that.
No, you're not.
So my advice to you is, after you've done your shopping, maybe a day later, 2 days later, full fridge stocked, everything at home is
you
going...
You don't even need anything.
You don't need anything.
Go to the grocery store.
Go to the grocery store and just peruse the culture.
Just
walk around, see...
Just walk the one aisle that they put all of the international foods in all together.
Well,
like,
you can
as
walk
as
any
aisle,
is what I'm saying.
Together.
You can go to the deli, you can say whatever, but make sure it's a fancy grocery store.
Okay, that's a big difference.
But I'll say that any grocery store will do, but a fancy grocery store
is... So it is about Eataly.
It's about going to a grocery store and just saying, wow, look at all that food.
Okay, I got something for you, Miles.
All right.
You live on the east side.
Uh-huh.
I want you to drive further east. And go one of the further east H Marts.
Yeah,
oh,
H Mart,
I love
baby.
H-Mart.
The ones out there though have full food courts.
Oh, that's fucking baller.
With like probably 8 different vendors. I'm not even exaggerating.
So cool.
And there's like Korean barbecue. There's soups. There's pastries. Mm. There's desserts. Like it is amazing.
Yeah.
Just for the food court.
I love the yeah.
A common joke amongst Asian Americans is, why do we keep telling white people about Asian grocery yeah. stores?
You shouldn't.
They've
because
discovered
they're
amazing.
Them. So good.
And the trick is the produce is the same, but it's way cheaper.
Way cheaper, yeah. And they have way more varieties of mushrooms.
Yeah,
and oh, they way have more fruits. Gnocchi mushrooms.
12 types of mushrooms yeah. minimum.
And you can get like that sometimes on a blue moon. You can get that shit at Whole Foods, but it's like fucking $20.
Oh, it's so expensive. And cabbages.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you know there's multiple blank choice? We have bok choy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like 30.
There's different choice?
Uh-huh. There's sun choy. There's some other choy.
I think because bok choy is a word in Chinese, I might be totally wrong, but I think it's something very general.
Yeah.
So I think that it's not like, I think it's just something so general that there are easily different varieties.
Bok choy, nok choy,
rock choy.
Rock choy.
And roy choy.
What's up? We're rock choy.
I would say the one place I do that naturally in any grocery store, even with a list, is the ice cream aisle.
Yeah.
Do you? Maybe this is everyone, but once you get all your stuff and then your thought process goes, maybe I should treat myself to
frozen.
Ice cream.
There is the and I deserve a reward.
And then and then that's where I finish all my groceries within, you know, 10, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then I'll stand in front of the ice cream for like a good 30 minutes, just staring at the varieties and then going like, oh, what's that brand? Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe I should get Halo Top because that's like less calories. Mm-hmm. No, I don't want to eat that.
I'm not eating this for less calories.
You know, Miles.
And then I leave with no ice cream.
I
think this is okay advice.
Hey!
This is good advice, I'd say.
You kind of said it in a weird way, as per usual.
Yeah.
But like, you go to the grocery store with the list, you're doing a chore.
Chump.
You're not a chump. No, you have to. You have to.
Member of society.
You have to do your chores sometimes.
Sheep.
But if you go to a grocery store with an open mind, maybe even an empty stomach, which that can be dangerous. Treat the grocery store experience as a way to get inspiration about what potentially you should cook.
I do that all the time. I typically, you know, even this, like normally if it was going to be a weekend and people might come over, I'll be like, why would she have dinner? I'm like, well, let's just go to the store, see what's on sale, and let inspiration will happen.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, you have to know what you're doing.
You can't
buy a bunch of random stuff and expect to turn into a meal.
No, you typically go get a hero protein.
Yep.
And design the dish, the rest of the dish around that.
I like that.
Yeah.
And whether, I'll say that I think I'm going to the grocery store a little dehydrated because I'm always in the fruit section looking for the wateriest fruits.
You should drink.
Oh, what about a watermelon? Or a
grocery stores make you thirsty.
Maybe you're just generally dehydrated.
I think I am.
Miles.
Piss is cold brew does not hydrate you.
Just like that delicious egg yolk.
Yeah, exactly.
You got horny piss. You missed our egg conversation, Ned.
Oh, shit.
Or you might not have because it might be in the afterpod.
Well, we're going to keep talking about eggs on the afterpod. Join our community at patreon.com/tryguys. You can become a Triceratops today, support the show, and get access to one extra podcast a week.
Mm-hmm. Plus, this winter, you're going to get a behind-the-scenes series about Without a Recipe. There's lots of extra bonus content coming through there, so lots of cool stuff to see.
Mm-hmm.
Cool stuff to hear.
Yeah, if you've met Jake on the Discord, our new Patreon creative associate is making stuff for you on Patreon. Mm-hmm.
And I will be joining again next week.
Yeah,
for our special colonizers episode.
Ooh. Thanksgiving alert.
Ha ha. Fine. Well, Keith, hit us with the official tripod theme song.
Well, Keith, hit us with the official tripod. You can't tee yourself up. Someone will do it for you. Yeah, let me do it. Well, Keith, hit us with that official tripod theme song.
I'm gonna rent a boat with my honey. I'm gonna call the people with the photo camera. I'm gonna put my hand on her booty. And then I'm gonna be in the papers, mama. It's the tripod.
Until next time, stay beautiful.